Hello, and welcome to A Health Podicy.
You know, once something that people like comes out, it's hard to roll that back.
I'm your host, Alan Weil. We're recording this episode on November 4th, 2020, at about 2 p.m. Eastern Time, less than 24 hours after the last polls closed in the 2020 election. We don't yet know who the next president will be or which party will control the U.S. Senate. It's pretty clear the Democrats will hold on to the House. Regardless of the exact outcome, we know that there will be a lot of health policy issues for our political leaders to handle over the next few years. I'm joined today by Kimberly Leonard, senior healthcare reporter at Business Insider, and Shannon Muchmore, editor at Healthcare Dive. Rather than me asking all the questions like I usually do, today we're going to mix things up so I get to include my own perspective on what the implications are for health policy after this consequential election. Kimberly, Shannon, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here with you.
Thanks for having me.
It's great that you can join us today. Kimberly, why don't you get us started?
Yeah, well, it's... Where to begin? I suppose we can start first by, you know, here we are in the middle of finding out who our next president will be. It looks like Joe Biden is leading at this point, but some of the races are still very early to call. Let's go over first if each of you could speak about what the different healthcare priorities would be under an administration of Joe Biden or Donald Trump. Specifically regarding the types of administrative actions they could take on healthcare.
Yeah, well, administrative action may be the only option available to either one of them, frankly, with a divided Congress. We've already seen President Trump working with a split House and Senate, and there really aren't any legislative achievements other than zeroing out the penalty under the Affordable Care Act, which is part of why the ACA is going in front of the Supreme Court next week. But Joe Biden probably will face something very similar if the Senate stays in Republican hands. You can't move much if you don't control the agenda, if you don't set the calendar, even if you can pick off one or two Republicans on a substantive basis from a procedural basis, it'll be hard to get anything moving. So what's likely, I guess, from my perspective is from a Biden presidency, probably the first step is trying to reverse many of the administrative actions that were taken during the Trump administration, particularly around the Affordable Care Act. We've seen a president strongly opposed to the law, saying publicly that it doesn't exist anymore, even though it does. And part of making it not exist is eliminating all the marketing. It's making available short-term, limited-duration plans that don't have to meet the ACA standards. It's basically doing anything possible to minimize the footprint of the law, and seems reasonable to think that just on an administrative basis, a Biden administration would reverse those things. And then the other place I'd focus is the Trump administration's been very interested in work requirements in Medicaid, which they've also done through waivers, which is an administrative process. Those have been held up a lot by the courts, but at least the administration has been supportive of them. And I don't think we'll see those kinds of waivers approved if there's a Biden administration.
Shannon, what do you see happening with some of the drug pricing executive orders that President Trump signed?
Well, we've seen those also struggle in the courts. Certainly, Biden wouldn't be one to try to cozy up to pharma, but it's proving difficult to just tackle that issue straight up on executive order. So that could be something where if we do see Biden in the White House and a Republican Senate, that they might try to come up with some bipartisan legislation there, since we know that there may not be a whole lot of room for bipartisan success. It could be they know that this is a huge issue for Americans, drug prices continuing to rise, especially as older Americans, that population grows. So that might be something where the group tries to come together, find something they can agree upon, especially with other issues being very hard to tackle. The only other thing I could think of really that might be successful with that setup would be surprise billing legislation, since that's also something that is bipartisan agreement. There needs to be a fix there.
You know, I think what's notable is that I don't think we're going to hear much about Medicare for All, and we probably aren't going to hear even much about a public option, things that, you know, really energize the Democratic base, but with no legislative path forward, it's going to be hard to figure out what to say about those other than making promises that it's going to be really hard to keep.
Right. Well, Alan, you mentioned the Affordable Care Act. So justices will hear that with the newly seated Justice Amy Coney Barrett on Tuesday. We won't know what the ruling is going to be, but as you hear those arguments, and hopefully we know a little bit more about what the results are from the election, what are you going to be thinking about might happen when we know who's going to be in the White House January, into January?
Yeah, this is a really crazy scenario. So, of course, projecting the results of the Supreme Court case it's a fool's errand to even try that. You could see anything from the law being fully upheld to being fully tossed out to various severability approaches in between. It seems to me, though, that this is now occurring in this very odd backdrop where one of the arguments sometimes made to the court if they strike down a provision or a part of a law is, well, you know, Congress will come back and fix it. Or if it wasn't clear what they wanted, they could just go and do it the right way. And with a divided Congress, that's not a very likely scenario. There hasn't been any desire on the part of the Republican Party to improve or fix what were seen as errors in the Affordable Care Act. Don't know why that would change now. So in some ways, it's like this is the Supreme Court's going to have the last word. If they take things out of the law, there's kind of no way to get them back in this electoral map. And then the administration, whoever's administration it is just going to have to work with what's there, again, without much room to maneuver. The most extreme situation of like full repeal, which fully throwing out the law, I should say, repeal would be a legislative act. You know, it's pretty much unimaginable in the scenario that we're looking at electorally right now that the next Congress and the next president would be able to craft anything like a replacement. It just seems unimaginable. And although I don't think that's the most likely outcome of the court case, if that were to come to pass, we would truly have completely altered the health policy landscape in about as fundamental a way as you can imagine.
Kimberly, as we consider this likelihood for more deadlock, what are your thoughts on another coronavirus relief package that's been held up, certainly, but now we're getting to the post-election phase? What might we see?
Exactly. Well, I think it's safe to say at this point that a multi-trillion dollar bill is probably not what we're going to see, but we will have to pass some kind of a bill, I think there's wide recognition that there's relief that's needed for the unemployed, that there's more relief needed for small businesses. The main area where Democrats and Republicans disagree is on state funding. Republicans really see it as a bailout to what they say are mostly blue states that they say have mismanaged their finances and would just use the money to plug holes in their budget. It's hard to see whether there would be an appetite by President Trump during the lame duck, if he were to lose the election, to pass something, you know, in December even. So we might not even have a stimulus until February. And even then, coming to broad agreement will be difficult. And it'll be a much narrower package than the HEROES bill that Democrats put together that really contained a lot of wide-ranging provisions, including implementing massive testing and contact tracing, national strategies. But they'll have to come to some sort of a compromise and get rid of the gridlock, because getting out of this pandemic is not only is key to getting us back on track economically and to getting, you know, life back to normal as people see it. And it's going to take a lot more money and a lot more time. Other than finding a vaccine, which even itself won't get us to the place where we need to be.
Kimberly, can I follow up? Senator McConnell just today seems to now be showing an interest in doing something in this area this year as opposed to waiting next year. Maybe that's because he's thinking he'd rather negotiate with a Trump administration than a Biden administration. But I'm also thinking about the fact that the latest wave of COVID really is hitting the center of the country. Do you think that changes? I mean, the rhetoric of bailing out blue states had some resonance in the first wave when it was, you know, New York hit hardest. But do you think that changes now with the distribution of COVID moving to other parts of the country?
I'm not sure that it does. I think that there's still this sort of rhetoric around amid the Republican Party that the states don't really need the funding. And so they need to really push further and show that, you know, without it, that they would have massive layoffs amongst, you know, teachers, firefighters, police officers, you know, if they didn't have some of these changes. There's also a case to be made for loosening some of the regulations around the funding that they already sent states. It's really limited how they can use that. So they can change the way that allocated funding was already put aside and then add funding on top of that. I don't really see them, not making any changes there when, you know, there's that pot of money that has yet to be spent. So it'll be a tough battle. I do think they'll give a little bit on it. I don't really know what the timeline will be because I don't know if the president will want to go along with it, or maybe he'll want to go even bigger and bolder than Republicans do on his way out. And of course, there's still the question over, whether we're going to have recounts and how much longer we're going to be waiting for an answer to the presidential election.
Our United Healthcare Community and State Newsletter is your go-to source for the latest Medicaid news and United Healthcare programs serving Medicaid beneficiaries. Subscribe now by visiting our website at uhccs.com/newsletter. Stay in the know by gaining access to our latest blogs, educational videos, and upcoming events. At United Healthcare, our mission is to help people live healthier lives and make the health system work better for everyone in local communities across the U.S.
Okay, so Alan, as we just saw, the country is still really deeply divided politically. That doesn't seem likely to change, perhaps could be even more so than we've known, but at the same time, the importance of academics and scientists being transparent, being neutral, unbiased is probably more important than ever. How does Health Affairs think about that and do its best to achieve trust?
Yeah, it's a big challenge these days. I mean, part of the trust comes from our peer review process, which is very important in the academic environment that we operate in, knowing that the methods and the data are reviewed by others and there's a process for making sure that concerns that one person may have about the work are addressed. I think the political division, you know, we edit our submissions very heavily, and part of what we're editing for is we certainly want authors to have a point of view if they have one, but they need to express it in a way that isn't piling on to sort of the partisan language and the rhetoric. So, you know, you can have a very above board scholarly discussion about disagreements about the role of government, about Medicare for all or Medicare Advantage. You can have a disagreement about whether the government should be involved in setting or negotiating pharmaceutical prices in the Medicare program. And there are ways to have that discussion that are not partisan. They can still bring up ideological differences in point of view, but they don't have to sort of push the buttons or challenge the motivations of people on the other side. Thankfully, most of the papers that come in don't do a lot of that, but we're always on the lookout for it. I think one of the challenges we're having right now is that, and I'm certainly not the first to say it, people talk about sort of science inherently being politicized, that it's not even sort of the language you use, it's just even approaching things and sort of carrying the scientific mantle is somehow seen as a partisan position. That one I really don't know how to get around. But, you face this challenge too. I wonder if you want to say something about how you think about it. You don't want to alienate your audience any more than we do.
Certainly not. I think I start with knowing that I have an opinion, and I don't subscribe to the idea that I should just pretend my opinion doesn't exist, but that my readers shouldn't be able to know what it is from reading our stories. So I think about it, like I'm covering in the other story. If I were covering a hurricane, there are facts. And there are, conclusions to be drawn, analysis to be made. So I always read, and when I do editing as well, I think specifically with an eye toward that. If somebody has an extremely strong opinion on what I'm writing about, and I think of it, read it like they would, can I back everything up? Can I show my work? I don't necessarily want to do that in the actual writing, because then it'll be a textbook. But if I'm challenged, do I have the receipts to back that up? And as long as I feel confident that I could say that to anybody, then I keep it in. But if I don't, well, maybe I need to tone it down. Maybe I need to cut that part out. Just always have to think about it as if, the person that would most want to challenge it was reading it. How would I respond? And do I have a good case? And then give that to somebody else and my editors. And that's why we have editors. It's really important that they can then say, hey, do you back that up? Show me how. Where's the link? Where's the research? What about you, Kimberly?
Well, I do think in some ways that it's been a difficult political climate to work under. And I do think that sometimes members of the press don't help themselves by the way that they either make comments on television or radio, or the way that they talk about stories on social media. I do think that there needs to be a more defined line in the way that reporters speak about a lot of these issues. And I think that the way that we saw the election play out, even though it's still going, that there is a divide between the way that reporters in major cities at major outlets cover Americans and what they see as important in their communities, and then the way that, the broader Washington world operates. And so I try to be cognizant of that. I try to take in what I hear. I don't argue with people on social media who challenge something in my story. It can also be difficult when you write a story that might elaborate on facts that exist within a certain healthcare program, but then a senator's office or a congressperson's office will, blast that story out to all their followers as if it's meant to boost their position. It shouldn't be viewed that way. There are trade-offs with anything that we do, and our job is not to obscure the difficulties of healthcare policy in order to advance a particular perspective or narrative, but only to show that these are the facts as they exist. And so then the reader or the voter, it's up to them to decide the type of country that they want to live in and what they value and how they think about their healthcare and the rest of the way that they live.
Kimberly, you mentioned that the sort of different worlds people live in, and we do see these divides. Shannon, I wonder if you could comment on if there are topics that you think maybe we aren't covering enough that would speak to people who feel disaffected right now. If there are emerging issues that you're hoping you can swing more of your attention toward after we get through this election.
I think One of them is, in addition to just pricing overall, price transparency. It's something we know, it looks like hospitals aren't likely to win their challenge to the requirement that they start posting the negotiated rates they have with commercial insurers on their websites, making that information available. There's a chance, especially if some third-party organizations get in and use that information to make more user-friendly, consumer-friendly apps or portals that could let people really have a better idea of what it's going to cost them when they need a knee replacement, for example. That's something that I think could actually really be useful for anyone and everyone, but it's fought pretty hard by industry. So it's another chance where if we are facing a pretty gridlocked Capitol Hill, perhaps there could still be work on price transparency. And again, surprise billing. Nobody wants to get a very large bill they weren't expecting when they did their homework and made sure the hospital they went to was covered in their network. So I think especially when more attention is being paid to these issues, as so many Americans are unfortunately having to be hospitalized, having family members, these are expensive treatments. It's still unclear how long insurers may waive co-payments for testing for treatment. And especially we're getting new treatments all the time, vaccine eventually, we all certainly hope soon. That lack of transparency around what somebody might pay out of pocket, expect to pay down the road, is I think pretty alienating for people from the healthcare industry, and it could be addressed.
Shannon, on that topic, I'm curious, you know, a lot of the price transparency rules were put out by the Trump administration. Do you think that's something that the Biden administration might actually preserve of the Trump administration's healthcare policy accomplishments?
I think so. It's really hard to roll back something like that. You know, just as if it's hard now to say something like protecting pre-existing conditions, you know, Republicans now tout that even if they aren't always actually protecting them. But, you know, once something that people like comes out, it's hard to roll that back. And it's hard to argue against a lot of these transparency requirements. Some of them are further down the road, but once hospitals, for example, have figured out how to comply, and if they're doing so on January 1, I don't see a Biden administration saying, never mind, let's pull back on transparency in healthcare. That just seems unlikely. Alan, is there anything else you think that a Biden administration might continue to follow in the Trump footsteps?
Yeah, I think the transparency is a good example. I mean, the statutory authority for most of those regs is the Affordable Care Act, so it's sort of consistent with, you know, where Biden is coming from, even though I agree with you that Trump administration's taken it further than the Obama administration did. You know, there's this whole area of sort of value-based payment and pay for performance, which these are phrases that I think often are thrown around without a lot of specificity, but certainly the Affordable Care Act created the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. It created accountable care organizations. We've seen lots of experimentation with bundles and different models of ACOs. And again, the Trump administration, you know, early on, I think people were unsure how aggressive they would be. And in fact, payment models that require health providers to take financial risk has been a high priority of this administration, which you know, it might not have been. That's also an area where I think you could certainly see some continuity. The roots of the efforts are in the ACA, but the specifics of the efforts have been extended quite substantially by the Trump administration. There's no particular reason that a Biden administration would want to turn away from those. Anything going on at Business Insider or at Healthcare Dive that we should know about? This is my chance to get a little inside scoop.
Well, at Business Insider, we're building out a DC bureau. We've hired a whole team that has started this year. This is the first time Business Insider has had a DC presence, although we do have a global presence. But it's very exciting. We're growing our newsroom by, I think, 100 reporters over the next year. We have both a non-subscription portion of our website, as well as a subscription portion that really has exclusives and deep dives and interviews with top folks in the Trump administration and in Congress. And, you know, just like everyone else, we're sort of waiting to see what the results will be and how that will impact voters and, of course, how it'll impact the healthcare industry.
Healthcare Dive certainly suggest listeners subscribe to our daily newsletter. We'll certainly be following up on the results as well. And in early December, we'll be rolling out, it's a package we do every year that takes a look at companies and people in the industry that have really been newsmakers. We call it Dive Awards. And so people can be on the lookout for that. And then 6 months into the public health emergency, we published a pretty big project that took a look at things like the new normal for hospitals, how telehealth was just rushed into service so quickly for so many providers, and also things like what nurses have to say. So I direct people to that project as well.
Well, I know it's an incredibly busy time for both of you. There's always a lot going on, but there's sort of never been a time quite like this. So Kimberly, Shannon, I really appreciate you taking time out of this day to join me here on A Health Podyssey, and had a lot of fun talking to you and learned a lot about what you're working on and where you think the country's going. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It was a real pleasure.
Yes, thank you.
Climate change is affecting how we live. With wildfires raging and the number of natural disasters increasing, policy changes are being developed to address the effects of climate transformation. The upcoming December 2020 Health Affairs issue explores how health policy is reacting to our planet's new normal. Don't miss this critical issue. Subscribe to the journal by visiting our website at www.healthaffairs.org.
A Health Podyssey is produced by Health Affairs, the leading journal for health policy research. Jeff Byers produces the show under the direction of Patty Sweet. Brian Dobbs edits the show. Sue Ducat and Sarah Kolk help dot the I's and cross the T's with scheduling. Julia Vivalo produced the artwork. Music by Brian Dobbs and Julia Vivalo. Like the show? Subscribe to A Health Podyssey on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And please leave us a review. It helps others find the show. Thanks for listening and have a great morning, day, or evening.